The Green Front with Betsy Rosenberg, Wednesdays at 2 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Turn it around. We are every day. You just don't hear about it in mainstream media very much, but you certainly do on the green programs like The Green Front and a couple of other great ones on the Progressive Radio Network. Hello, I'm Betsy Rosenberg, and even though I'm sounding awfully chipper and cheery, I am very sad and was to learn early this week that we have lost a pioneer, one of my sheroes, I'm sure one of yours, and if she's not right now, she will be by the time you hear about her incredible accomplishments and life legacy. I'm talking about the untimely passing of Wangari Maathai. If you don't know who she is, stay tuned. Going to be chatting with the director of the Greenbelt Alliance, the group that she was most associated with, but an incredible list of accomplishments is really putting it mildly, because she's really a game changer, a world changer, truly a pioneer in the environmental and women's movement. So we're going to be checking in with him in just a moment. And then we'll be chatting with Joseph Rome, our favorite climate blogger. He posted a great clip of Stephen Colbert talking about global warming for a whole 4 minutes, and pretty funny at that. So we'll play that for you and then get some comments on the latest climate news from Joseph Rome, always on top of things at climateprogress.org. And in the last 20 minutes, we're going to get some good news about the state of the solar industry. If you believe the deniosaurs, you'd think that the collapse of Solyndra signifies the death of solar au contraire. A lot of good news happening, including Google investing a lot of money as they can in solar energy and some other positive developments. So we'll be speaking with someone from the Solar Industry Association about that. So stay with us. A very full show today. And now it is time to welcome Steve Mills. He is the director of the Greenbelt Alliance. Their United States base is in the capital, Washington, D.C., so he joins us from there. Thanks for being with us, Steve, and so sorry about the sad passing of Wangari Maathai.
Well, thank you very much. Delighted to be with you.
Yes, but horrified, really, to see the news. Maybe that's a little bit strong, but certainly saddened greatly and stunned for those of us who did not even know that she was not well. I was hoping to meet her next year, actually, on a trip to Kenya, and she just transformed so many people's lives and, you know, of course, the Nobel winner. And so we really wanted to start with a summary of her, you know, highlights of her life. But if you could begin with a little bit of background, how did she become, you know, famous and such an accomplished woman? It as always, starts sometimes with a small act that turns into something much bigger than even the person doing it ever could have conceived.
Well, that's true. You know, Wangari began very simply. She was working with the Kenyan women, National Council of Women of Kenya, and she was listening to the women in the rural areas complain they didn't have access to fuel wood. They were losing a lot of the topsoil. Their children were suffering from diseases associated with malnutrition. They were complaining they didn't have enough water. So she connected to the fact that water was disappearing because they were deforesting their water catchment areas. And that's what gave Wangari the idea to plant trees, to suggest to the woman they plant trees. So she gathered.
She went on to oversee the planting of millions of trees, so go ahead.
Right,
yeah.
Right. About 47 million now. She's left quite a legacy.
That's a heck of a lot of CO2 being absorbed and oxygen being released that heretofore would not have been.
Right. So the response was, well, you know, we don't know how to plant trees. You need a doctorate to plant trees. The forester still is, you need to have an advanced degree. And Wangari's response was, no, I don't think you need an advanced degree. And so they started small, and they started teaching each other. And before long, her group became a movement, and her movement became a political force. And that's what shaped the future of the country, and frankly is still having reverberations across the continent.
I understand that she had either mostly or exclusively women planting these trees. Is that, I'm sure that was calculated if true, and is that correct, in fact? Or
that is true, and that's where she was reaching out the most, because women do most of the work around the world, you probably know, and she was reaching out as a way to empower them, to give them hope, and arranged for the women to receive, you know, a very small amount of payment for caring for the trees. But she gave them hope that they could improve their lives. But again, in doing so, she built a following and a political constituency that scared the hell out of the authoritarian rulers who were running the country. I remember years ago when I was working for the Sierra Club at the time, I received a call from Wangari's daughter, Wanjira. She was studying at Emory. And Wanjira was very upset because the Kenyan police had encircled her mother's home and had, because they couldn't break down her front door, had extracted her through a window in the home, and she was cut and bruised, and they hurt her back, and they had thrown her in a prison cell. Again, all because this woman was organizing a constituency, a political constituency that the government found threatening. And so we led her friends around the world, really. There's a chorus to defend her and by demanding her civil rights be respected.
And was she outspoken and brave from the start, or did her courage grow with her accomplishments and with
not at all? You know, Wangari went to school in the U.S., but she studied in Catholic schools, and Wangari was a very good girl. She minded the nuns and was very respectful. But I think what happens to a lot of people when these leaders are born and made is that they're pushed into a corner. And I think when she was in return to Kenya after college, she realized that there was a lack of equality for women. You have to remember, at the time when Wangari was speaking out, women really in Kenya did not speak out. That wasn't allowed. In fact, she was divorced by her husband for being outspoken. And when she lost her divorce proceedings in the court and challenged the judge threw her in jail for being too outspoken.
And what year was this, Steve, that this happened?
This would have been in the 60s or 70s, probably, 1970s.
So she went on to have incredible success in terms of overseeing the planting of, as you said, millions of trees. How did that actually happen? Where did the trees come from, the seeds? Where did the women come from? Mm-hmm. Where did the Greenbelt Movement come from?
Well, the Greenbelt Movement, again, it was a product of the National Council of Women in Kenya, and that's where it began, but it blossomed from that because it provided both economic and social opportunities for the women to advance and improve their quality of life. And I think over time that the trees initially were planted on in vacant property in farmland, and the seeds were taken either from the government tree nurseries or from private nurseries, and then they began to be donated. So various sources. Now, in the intervening years, Wangari and the Greenbelt Movement have changed the way they've been planting trees, actually, so the focus has been more on Kenya's critical watersheds and the planting there to help, again, make sure that the natural resources are protected for future generations. And as you know, and I'm sure your listeners have been hearing about the horrible drought that's been happening in East Africa, that this critical watershed protection has never been more important.
Absolutely. And, of course, most likely that killer drought is exacerbated by the great exacerbator, climate change, of course.
Right.
And that is
right.
One of the initiatives that she and, of course, the Greenbelt Movement works on.
Mm-hmm. And she'd become more outspoken about that. Again, Wangari started small, planting trees, but over time realized that there was an overlay. And I think this is why she has developed such a following around the world, because I've really not met anyone who was able to weave together the issues of human rights and women's empowerment and conservation all towards a goal of economic improvement and green livelihoods. So certainly Wangari had been recognizing the impact that climate change was having on the continent of Africa, with already plagued by scarce natural resources. And the only way, again, is to protect, the only way she thought forward was to protect the resources and that were already available to the Kenyans and improve those.
And anyone who plants a tree is looking with an eye towards the future, but she always had that in mind. In fact, a quote here on your website, "We have a responsibility to protect the rights of generations of all species that cannot speak for themselves today. The global challenge of climate change requires that we ask no less of our leaders, of ourselves." And she always began with herself as an example. How, any way to gauge how many people she has inspired around the globe, given her influence, and then, of course, her Nobel Peace Prize in 2004, won her life.
Right. Well, you know, I can only tell you that as dark and as sad as this week has been, the outpouring of response from around the world has been so phenomenal. For your listeners who are interested, you can visit our website, greenbeltmovement.org, and you'll see the special pages we've put up for condolences. And the response is from around the world, and I think that is what she touched on. I wrote a piece for Sierra Magazine this week, and I mentioned that. I think that Wangari often said that you cannot protect the environment unless you empower people, you inform them, you help them understand that these resources are their own and that they must protect them. But I think this message resonated around the world, and that's why she was so loved, because in so many places, as you know, there are business and private interests who profit off of the destruction of natural resources for personal and private gain. And I think Wangari's message, which resonated, was no, actually, these natural resources belong to everyone, and they should not be used for strictly for private gain. They should be used to promote the common good.
Absolutely, and in her passing, sadly, but is all too often the case, many people who had not been aware of her work and her life will now know her because
yes.
She
And it will continue. Let me tell you, Wangari has left an enormous legacy in Kenya and around the world. The Greenbelt Movement is so strong now. We have 150 staff in Nairobi, offices in London and Washington dedicated to developing the support for the work in Kenya. Thousands of women have been empowered to lift themselves from poverty, directly engaging, 150,000 people. In Kenya regularly, 4,000 community groups we have now operating across the country with these tree planting projects, and a transformation of landscapes, places where Greenbelt has worked.
It reminds you a little bit of Israel's history with the planting of trees. Those of us who are Jewish and went to Sunday school, religious school, remember donating money every Sunday, to plant a tree. And we all thought we had trees with our names on it in the land of milk and honey. Not quite, but
right.
We did contribute. What a difference green can make. It goes a long way, doesn't it?
And some extraordinary legacy she has left, some of her biggest battles to protect Uhuru Park in downtown Nairobi and more lately Karura Forest, which really is Nairobi's Central Park, now would not be there were it not for Wangari leading women into the forest to plant trees and to stop the developers who wanted to profit.
And I understand Kenyan children, especially girls, don't go to school for very long, that they have to start working in the fields or with their families or on the farms. Is that changing? Has she been able to have any impact on, the life cycle of girls, especially in Kenya?
I believe so, and she's certainly shown what an education can do. She Wangari wasn't raised in a wealthy family. She came from very modest means, in a time when girls didn't go to school. But she has shown what commitment and education combination can achieve. And I have to believe that alone has inspired young girls in particular to seek out that path.
She also was a prolific writer. She had written how many books, had how many published?
We've had at least five or six. My favorites are Unbowed, her biography, and The Challenge for Africa, particularly I'd recommend for those looking to understand the issues at stake in Africa these days.
How concerned and upset was she about what's unfolding in Somalia? I would imagine extremely.
Well, she's been active, of course, and been a spokesperson for across the continent on issues related to conflict and violence. And as you know, so many of the wars on the continent have their basis in conflicts over natural resources. And she had been more and more outspoken of late over this conflict within countries among people over water and energy resources and how the need to utilize these resources sustainably.
I'm speaking with Steve Mills, director of the Greenbelt Alliance, speaking about the untimely and very sad passing of Wangari Maathai, the Nobel Peace Prize winner who passed away at age 71 earlier this week of ovarian cancer. Were many people aware that she was not well? Had she been ill for some time?
Well, you know, it's Kenyan tradition. You don't speak about such things, and you don't speak about sickness because it gives power to the sickness. And so no, she was quiet about that. There were a few close friends and family members who were aware, but I think that's not something she wanted to make public. In fact, she didn't want to detract from the work that was doing. And frankly, we were in regular communication with Wangari up until the end. In fact, she was planning to come over here this last couple of weeks for the UN General Assembly and the Clinton Global Initiative. We had a number of events planned around the country, and, you know, I was receiving emails from her on a regular basis, and we all did hope that she was improving, and I know she was hoping to come back over here because she has so many friends in the U.S., but just had a turn for the worse and wasn't able to make it.
So sad. What a loss. Is there anyone that will try to follow in her footsteps? Not that anyone can fill them.
Well, we have, again, a great staff in Kenya. Our executive director, Professor Karanja Nairoge, is doing a wonderful job leading the staff during this difficult time. And we have a lot of young staff, so no question in my mind that the Greenbelt movement will continue to grow and prosper. It has golden credibility in Africa and around the world, and an outpouring of support already from those who are interested in making sure her legacy is continued. And again, more information on our website at greenbeltmovement.org, how people can help to make sure that Wangari's legacy is continued.
And in addition to the Greenbelt Movement, I'm aware of two entities that she was working with. One, the Women's Earth Alliance, and
right.
also Corporation Shackley, which has a strong green record, and I understand it was because of the current CEO, Roger Barnett, appealing several times to Wangari Maathai to be a partner in some of their efforts to plant trees around the world. Apparently he picked up Swahili somewhere in his Yale education, and that impressed her, because I think if the story is correct, is accurate, she had not before that partnered with any corporation.
She hadn't, you know, and as you know, when you're in a position like that, a lot of corporations come to you. But Wangari was quite fond of Roger, and they were quite close, and I know he's mourning her loss deeply. But, you know, part of our responsibility is, for any of us in this business, is to look for relationships that fit. Those of us who do nonprofit work and have missions, to look for private-public partnerships, and Roger was one of the first.
Yes, and that, as I was investigating that company to partner with for our newly launched America's Green Tea Party, we have house parties and offer, you know, green cleaning products, and we chose Shackley because, in part because of this kind of track record, the partnership with Wangari, as well as having the products in the White House. We figure if they're good enough for and green enough for the First Family, they're certainly something we can proudly associate with. And in fact, for those in the Shackley family who sold a lot of products, the trip next year is to Kenya. And if you sold a lot of Shackley stuff, you got to plant trees with Wangari. And that was my dream, my vision. I will hang on to that, and many others, I'm sure.
Well, you and others can still come do that. We still have a lot of tree planting to do, and we encourage visitors to come visit us.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, and you will get some visitors, because there's a lot of Shackley reps working hard to come to Kenya. What is happening in that part of the world as far as, you know, environmental progress? I mean, because we here in the developed world are causing so much inordinate mm-hmm. amount of the damage in terms of carbon dioxide emissions, pollution, use of resources. We in the United States, of course, unsustainable at 4% of the world's population, causing 25%. Is some of that bad being offset by a lower footprint in that part of the world, or is poverty really the big dictator, and it's not about environmental responsibility as much as just not having the access to the resources that can, of course, in excess, be quite mm-hmm. damaging?
Well, you know, I tell you, Wangari was quite outspoken about this in the last few years, about the disparity in levels of pollution, frankly, and who was causing it and who wasn't, and part of it due with economic status. But she believed that, you know, we couldn't solve a problem like climate change alone. We have to do this together, and that there's a role for those of us in developed countries who do consume more, and there's a role for those in developing countries. And she was quite proud of the achievements they'd made in Kenya in land protection and conservation, where really some of the biodiversity and the the carbon sinks are, and very pleased that the 47 million trees the Greenbelt movement had planted had contributed again to part of the solution. And I think some of this will come up again in Durban at the next International Climate Meeting. That's going to be in December. You'll probably hear more about this conversation and the role for developed and developing countries. But I think it's going to ultimately be a partnership.
And do you have any late reports from what's going on in Somalia? We've seen these pictures that are just so horrifying. Is the world responding? Is aid coming in? Is there much that can be done, to turn things around in the short term in terms of the refugees and the starvation and the drought?
I suspect that it's been less publicized here because of the economic challenges in the U.S. right now, but there has been an outpouring of support in Somalia, and it's tragic, and it's just recurring. So I think, again, it requires all of us to think more about the lifestyles that we lead and the changes that we can make so that our own lives are more sustainable in this country and in Western developed countries, so that when we look at the impact that climate change is having in countries who are fighting increased desertification, lack of access to clean water, again, we have to understand how this plays into this cycle of violence. It really is a demand for a better quality of life from so many people.
And I know we have to wrap up in a moment. So if our listeners are just learning a little bit more about Wangari Maathai's life and passing, and they'd like to support her work and the Green Belt movement, what's the best thing they can do?
Please visit our website, www.greenbeltmovement.org. You'll see a lot about the life and history of Wangari Maathai and all that she taught and then all that we're going to be doing. And I expect we'll be hosting some memorial services around the country for people who would like to participate in the coming months. That'll be the place to find out about those.
And I saw something on your website. Isn't there a memorial service today to begin with? Isn't there something happening?
Well, there are actually events happening around the country. People are so inspired by our work that they're hosting events in their own communities, remembrances around the world. Of course, official services will be in Kenya starting this weekend and next week. But then the next couple of months, I believe that Wangari's family will be over in the U.S. and we'll be hosting some official events here as well.
And as sad as it is to lose her at the ripe young age of 71, what a legacy. Her life was filled with incredible success and accomplishments, and it's so nice that she was recognized in her lifetime. So we'll look at the positive side of that. And thanks for joining.
Thank you for your interest. She'd be very pleased.
And the website is greenbeltmovement.org. We've been speaking with Steve Mills from the Greenbelt Alliance in Washington, D.C. We're going to